Welcome back to the 801 podcast. I'm your host, Cho.
And I'm your host, Mel.
At this year's FujoCon, we held a roundtable on anti-culture with guests Ari and Crystal Marie called Fanti. We discussed anti-shipping and the bigotry found in the movement and the need to preserve BL culture, among other things. Fans were invited to submit questions for our panel, but we had such a lively debate that we ended up not getting through them all. Sorry. So this episode is our makeup panel to answer the rest of your questions. So please welcome Ari and Crystal Marie.
Well, I'm Ari. And of course, I was at FujoCon this summer and the previous one. And we were on the Fanti panel. And it was a very vigorous discussion. I have a background as a scholar in many topics, Japanese, education, social behavior, and of course, my favorite, LGBTQIA studies. And currently I'm moving from being a scholar of these things and moving into being a erotica author and of lesbian and LGBTQ fiction. You can find my current project, though still related to BL fandom and the Japan fandom, at blfanproject.com. Of course, that's the BL fan project, featuring all these voices from surveys that I circulate of BL fans across the world.
Oh, well, hello, everyone. I'm Crystal Marie. I was also at FujoCon this year. I led the Anime Rivals panel because I am, in fact, fangirl trash who will headcanon all the ships I want. and I'm also the host of Crunchyroll's Crunchycast and the co-founder of Beyond the Bot, which is an inclusive space for anime fans. And we have a YouTube channel called Beyond the Bot that is the evolution of Get in the Robot, which has over 500,000 subscribers on YouTube. And basically, that's kind of where I got my start in this space as a figure, I guess. But outside of hosting a lot of anime-driven content, I am also the CEO of a new media company and now the director of development for the new Historia, which is a project that ties into the Bloom Initiative, which is essentially boys love ongoing origins media effort.
So our first question is, what about antis as we know them, mark them as endemic to fandom? What about us contributed to make them look specifically like this?
When I saw this question, I was thinking of, I thought of a lot of things first, and they were all too complicated, but ultimately I came down to what are the cornerstones of fandom that we need to think about? You know, meta is something that's a huge part of every fandom. Mm-hmm. And ships are one of the cornerstones of fandom. They drive behavior and ideology. People care, people have them, it makes up a huge part of it. So when we're talking about what drives people to act certain ways or have certain thoughts, ends up being one of those things, which ends up being ships and fandom. But I think of, you know, in the before times, I think of very specific scenarios. We always know what a ship war is. Mm-hmm. And I think earlier on, and also I was much younger, so maybe I was just naive, but earlier on I saw ship war being, oh, it's a ship war. You know, it seemed really simplistic. But then as I was around social media, and you know, into those Tumblr years, you know, especially around like, I guess 2012, maybe is when I started seeing a lot and noticing a lot, people started to integrate this cornerstone around their entertainment media, you know, like, so this, the ships, the meta, they started taking that And they used it as a moral gauge. And mm-hmm. And so, like, I think about, you know, some very specific scenarios when I was around free fandom, when that first started, you know, when it was just the promo video. and people were freaking out saying, it's an anime. No, it won't be. It's just a promo, you know, for the studio. I think of one of the biggest battles I saw in free were problems with translators. You know, people were talking about translations. These translations are wrong. This person's translations are wrong. This translator has this ship. Therefore, they're trying to angle their translation towards that ship. But ultimately, what it came down to was, while people were being heinous towards translators, it always ended up being a ship war. Mm-hmm. It was always driven by their ships. Oh, I don't like this translation because it favors the ship that I don't have. My, what is it? My no TP, I don't even know about them, but you know, you get the same thing. They're non-ship. And that's one of the classic example. Well, kind of classic, I guess, classic to some kids. It was really simplistic when I was younger. And I may have just, I don't know if that was because it was simplistic as ship wars back in like the LJ days. You know, I was, let's see, 14, maybe 15.
As most of us are.
Yeah, yeah, getting into that LJ and being like, oh, ship wars, what's that? Oh, God.
But you see, even that is so interesting to me because we refer to it as ship wars, whereas now it really is fandom wars, right? Yeah. And I think when you mention social media, that's to me the key shift that occurred, which is that the parasocial relationships began in meta. Not just the being able to separate ourselves from the media we consumed and saying, oh, I like these two characters that I understand are fictional and that I can separate myself from and see it and contextualize it as fantasy.
Yes.
But now, now we have blurred lines when it comes to that, because not only do we are we exposed to media that we consume, we are exposed to media that interacts with us. This media talks back. Yes. We have media that now has a Twitter personality and talks back to us. Now, this is probably a marketing person assigned to have a brand book with the voice of that character, and they are essentially coming up with a script, but that's not how a fan perceives it. The way fandoms perceive these interactions is like, this character is alive somehow. And even when you try to separate yourself from it, when you try to be, oh, I can separate myself, you still get excited because you're human. And when a human interacts with anything that interacts back, it has an emotional response. I'm very much a data-driven person, guys. I will get nerdy on this shit. but essentially, with social media, that's kind of where that distinction between this is separate from me to this affects me deeply on an emotional and physical and mental level started happening. And that's how, to me, ship wars became fandom wars.
That is absolutely true. Actually, so Mel and I actually did a panel about this originally called Ship and Let Ship. We were first like looking into like anti-shipping and the movement as it was forming. And the first thing that came to mind was the Steven Universe critical community, if you guys remember that. It was people who like really enjoyed Steven Universe and it was their favorite show. But around like the early 2010s, when social justice really became a part of Tumblr, people started to marry social activism with their media because they were introverted kids. They didn't go outside. Everything in their lives was about fandom. That's where they lived. So in order to feel like they were actually doing something and making a difference in the world, they would take that social justice and apply it to fandom. And that's just eased into fandom. Suddenly wanting two white guys and a ship to get together really in canon was being promoted as, well, it'd be great queer representation. And because I am interpreting these sections this way, these scenes, these interactions in romantic context, it must be true. And denying me that is queer baiting. And suddenly wanting two white guys in a ship is not just, you know, something that you do because it's fandom. It's something that makes you a social activist because what you're really fighting for is queer representation. And I think ultimately that is the symptom, is wanting to use social justice language and feel like you're making a difference. Plus what Christelle said, which is, you know, people make these fandoms their entire livelihoods. And these aren't just characters to them, they're real people.
They're designed that way. Like that's, I also sympathize to a degree with the human component here of trying to fight what a corporation is investing millions of dollars to achieve. Like we are being bombarded with emotional interactions from characters. And it's gone to a level where now we feel we can also become characters ourselves, which is an entire area of study in university, performance. And performance.
Talk about that in a second when you're done.
Oh, 100%. If anything, I'll definitely leave that one to you. But yeah, essentially, You've got a company worth billions of dollars, and they're spending daily hundreds of thousands of dollars to get you to connect to something. It's going to be effective. You have no choice. You are living in a world where you are attached to your phone if you want to connect. And that means you're also under the control of these media companies to a degree. There's no such thing as just the ability to create a free will almost, because you are being, in fact, controlled and or manipulated by the ad revenue generated or the products that they're trying to sell. That's the society we live in. And that conversation needs to come into fandom, because we keep being very myopic about it and looking at it as just humans against humans. And it's not. It's humans against algorithms, against corporations, against capitalism, against robots, against systems. All of these factors contribute to why a person can become that emotionally attached or create such an intense parasocial relationship and need even recovery when that character, let's say, gets married to another character in an anime, because that is something that's happened. There have been people who have inflicted self-harm because they genuinely saw themselves as married or in a relationship with a character that belonged in a media property.
The one thing I'll say about algorithms is from my previous work experience in three-letter agencies, it is advisable that, yeah, you know, you should definitely cover up your computer camera when you're not using it, just as a side note. The other thing,
well, I was naked right now, I guess I need to go
I'm waiting to my FBI agent.
The other thing is that when it comes to algorithms, yes, they target quite literally everything. They are far more integrated in our lives and society than most people probably realize, from facial recognition everywhere, streetlights, or not streetlights, that sounds stupid, cameras, street cameras, the ones for like traffic control, you know, security cameras, personal cameras, you know, there's phones, these things are accessible and very in tune to facial recognition. And another thing to say about algorithms is that they are inherently racist. They're racist. Yeah. Their background is racist. How they're designed is, there's a lot of racism going on. Just, but that's another story for another day, but I wanted to say it.
Important though.
It's important note. I wanted to say it. But back to what Crystal was saying, the first thing about that connection, that personal connection, that personal relationship with media, with entities that either don't exist or don't know you exist, that has a name. It's had a name for a long time. It's had a name probably before all of us were born, but relatively since the 80s. It's called a parasocial relationship or interaction, depending on how you're talking about it. So parasocial, what it means is that you have an emotional investment or emotional connection. You're in a relationship with either something that does not exist or does not know you exist. So the ways in which they've studied this, they mostly look at celebrities, fans of celebrities. So back in the 80s and the 90s, especially in the early 2000s, is when they started getting more and more and more, but early 2000s especially, they got more and more and more, researchers did, and universities and groups started getting more into looking at parasocial relationship effects, what a parasocial relationship does. You know, the thing is though, when I came into the graduate scene, almost nobody had done anything on parasocial relationships and the Japan fandom. So anime, manga, video games. They had done things, they had done more on video games, but as far as the rest of it, almost nothing. So I was like, I'll do it. So that was what I was doing up in Boston. That parasocial relationship though has been around, easily noted. I mean, they started doing the research in the 80s, but we knew about it previously, like around Star Trek times. And it was those, that personal relationship, that personal connection to, say, your favorite characters, the stories, the worlds they live in.
When we talk about parasocial relationships, like tying it back to the question, what makes it endemic to fandom is that you already have a group of people that are primed to be pretty insular. And when you have like media that, you know, supposedly speaks back to you, and really still that's not always the case, because when you have a Japanese piece of media, American fans can only interpret what it means. I mean, Mel has brought it up very often that like American fans tend to believe that they have like some sort of sway over Japanese productions. Like when that petition went around and like, people like thought they made Free happen, and they did not. So in those cases, you're not being talked back to actually. You're in the West and that's just happening in Japan. But because of the way the fandom is set up, you're interacting with fans that can like talk back to you, and this little insular community starts up.
I do believe that I have not encountered anti-culture the way I had until I arrived in the United States, because there is a level of entitlement in specifically the US fandoms that I had not seen in other groups to that level. And I think that has more to do with just a general entitlement that comes from being what is the number one superpower in the world, which is a fact, you know, like I know we like to pretend that we're in the times where the world is equal or something when it comes to countries and politics, but the last world war was what, 100 and something years ago? It wasn't that, less than 100 years ago actually.
Yeah, it's more like 80 years ago.
It's not even been a century since the last world war and the United States won. And ever since that win, there is a power that the US holds that I believe is also part of something that only someone who lives outside the US can tell you, is the way that the US is marketed to other countries is very much in an imperialistic way. It is very much a America is the way, the American dream. America is the goal. This is who you want to become. This is what you want your society to become. And I especially come from a country that to this day, the gold mines of my country are run by American corporations and we don't have access to our own resources. And we are sold on the American ideal. And we have a lot of American franchises and a lot of American companies buying up beaches and things. So the idea that the society has that where I'm coming from is we need to aspire to be like the US, which means anyone I used to interact with growing up used to idolize Americans. And when we entered fandom spaces with that idealization, that also validated the idea that the US way of viewing things was the correct one, when that's not true. Because you can have the right to interpret anything however you want based on your culture and contextualize it for yourself, your emotions, etc., but not the right to impose. And that is what, to me, also characterizes a lot of anti-activity. It has to do with imposing a view rather than, this is my interpretation. We don't need to agree. But in the case of antis, I was targeted and attacked based on a hashtag. I never sought, for example, an anti. I have never, me, gone into an anti space. And I'm not saying this about anyone else, because I know that there are also pro-shippers who go into anti spaces specifically to attack them as well. I think, you know, that can happen on both sides. But my experience with that was I was just chilling in my own Instagram. I was posting about, I think, Love Stage, because I had the manga. And I was reading about it and I just put, oh my God, I'm such a happy hashtag Fujoshi. And that hashtag was targeted. And then I got a spiel of hate and threats for doxing and all these other things that, thank you, block and delete button, but essentially is a picture of how this, I guess, subculture of cancel culture has weaponized the ability to use social media by design to attack and put themselves on a pedestal to validate their entitlement. And a lot of that entitlement ends up being ethnocentric and very Eurocentric too.
Yes. Crystal, you mentioned it before that all this amplified when social media started happening. And that is essentially what happened, was that there's two things that really happened that make this the monster that it is now. I mean, aside from the ethnocentrism, it was technically
aside from, we humans, when we have power, our shit, and try to overpower others. Yes.
Yeah. Like the social media ends up being, you know, we had a way to connect with each other and act like assholes before, but now the social media and so many different social medias and having multiple that we're on, we have a super megaphone, like a super giant megaphone in which people can amplify this behavior. But also then you talked about how
social media attacked you. No, and the social media rewards the attack. Social media is designed. Okay, so here's what social media does. And I hope anybody who's listening, maybe look up Jaron Lanier. He's a really great futurist and computer scientist as well, and talks in depth about this stuff. But social media was designed to basically prioritize attention. Attention is the value. You want to get attention, not utility. It's not there to help you. It's not there to be practical. It's not there to make you happy. Social media is there to get your attention. That's what it's quantifying. So what's the easiest way to get a human to pay attention? You put them in fight or flight mode. Mm-hmm. Because that's how we have been designed by our evolution. That's how our brain chemistry works. So in
what better way to do that than take your entertainment interest and turn into a moral gauge? You know, it's about the kind of person you are, as opposed to, hey, I really enjoy this.
Yeah, or here's a guide. For example, somebody could make a really helpful guide. How to consume this media critically. Ooh, okay, that has some utility. Or how I believe these the morals touched upon in this particular piece of media correlate with my Catholic upbringing, an infographic. These are things that have utility. They have value. They teach, they educate. This is not what social media is going to rank. Because what social media wants is attention, and the more and the faster, the better. And the fastest attention you get is an emotional reaction based on fight or flight, which is brought on by either anger or fear. You're either going to fight something or you're going to run away from something. So whenever you see someone on Twitter saying, saying a hot take, and that's what gets or goes viral, that's how it was designed to behave.
There are algorithms for that.
What you had too was, in kind of the early years of the news media and the internet, because I mean, newspapers were still, plentiful, at least in America, in through the latter half of the 2000s, before we had the big recession, which like killed a bunch of newspapers. Mm-hmm. And so they all started to kind of like figure out, how do we innovate? How do we go online? And so you have the comment section, which now is disabled in a lot of news websites, because it so quickly turns into death threats for the reporters and all this kind of stuff. And so you have the phenomenon of the comment section, and hey, don't read the comment section. But I think that in like a microcosm is really kind of the sentiment that we have with fandom, where you're giving people this platform, you're doing it personally, because at least with these like newspaper places, usually it was your real name or it was tied to your Facebook. And so social media has not only pushed us to fight or flight and to have these conflicts because it's viral or it drives the algorithm, but we've been pushed to use our real selves. I mean, Facebook now, because of fake media, won't let you basically be anybody you're not. You have to actually verify who you are with your actual government ID to verify your name if they think you have a fake name. There's very few spaces where we can't actually be that we can be somebody else. Twitter is one of them, but Twitter is also the platform where we have politicians who are using it to basically write government policy over tweet. So I really question like how anonymous Twitter can be when it's literally or was a tool of the US government for 4 years. But we've had this erosion of our private spaces and the erosion of the idea that we could be different people online, that we could be anybody other than ourselves. And so your identity is now constantly being tied to it, because the system itself, the interface or the rules of the game are forcing you to use your real identity. So if I'm being forced to use my real identity and then also posting about the stuff that I would normally put under a different username, like it's very easy for people to find you and to then exploit it and say, tie it to your job and be like, oh, you should get fired for this. And it's like, well, I mean, where am I supposed to go? Like, I think that fans are like, pro shippers, I guess, are constantly being backed into this corner because the algorithms, because the interfaces, because the way the internet has gone has eroded all of our spaces to go places. And so it's very easy for antis to come at us. And I think that's in part breeding the antis, because I mean, you've literally given them the platform because you're rewarding them and you're not rewarding, the pro shippers.
It also in line with what you're saying, Mel, actually, now that I think about it, you brought up a good thing, which is that antis seem to operate under like being very like tied to their identity publicly online, because they truly believe what they're doing isn't wrong.
Yeah.
Or at least the ends justify the means, because you can go on any antis card and see everything they've ever been diagnosed with, where they live, their home address, their phone number.
Oh God.
Stop that. And I can't, it's still unfathomable to me as like a baby from the internet who had like AOL discs and was told like, don't put your real name online or, someone will come to our house and murder you. But it's pretty fucked up shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, America doesn't really do much about like in bullying in general. Like we had a bully as a president, and like ironically, the first lady's like mission was against online bullying. And so I think that we've not really had that. I don't want to say a reckoning, because there's like way more things America needs to deal with, like bigger issues. But if we don't like if we as a culture just still fail to see internet harassment as a real thing, and I mean, cops don't believe it's a real thing. It's not a crime in a lot of states. Women are never believed for this kind of stuff. Up until the moment that they actually commit like a bigger crime, or like something happens, like somebody loses their job or they do self-harm or they are harmed, it's not going to be taken seriously. And you've had all these things leading up to it that are basically red flags to those of us with brains, who can see, like you can look back in hindsight, it's 2020. And so I think that, I guess, in maybe dealing with the anti thing, this is kind of outside the scope of the question, like, I don't know, there's more that needs to be done on the front end. And like, until we can really get other people to understand that, like, no, what antis are doing, like, they feel so bold to not use their real, or to use their real names, but it's like, you're bullying people this whole way and doing things like actual harassment, even if it's on the internet. Like, this would not be okay if it was in real life. You would have a restraining order.
Okay. So our next question is something completely different. Would it be possible to start a translation project translating Japanese academic material on BL? This commenter wanted to expand their knowledge, and they know that a lot of the concentration of BL academia is in Japanese. And if there was any way that either we or someone listening could start a project, and I would also know, because as an amateur academic, I like to collect like academic shit and read it so we can apply it, not just to BL garden panels, but just like for my own knowledge. So do you guys have any ideas about this?
For translators, translation is expensive. So you, if you're not doing it yourself, you've got to pay someone. But I have a lot of thoughts about this when it comes to academia in general. I think a lot of people who are familiar with academia will also acknowledge this, but academia is horrendously flawed because when things are written in other countries that are not primarily English speaking, there are not many organizations or universities who are, they have an organized initiative to translate these things in mass. They leave it up to the individual scholars or the place of origin for those academic works. So it's really disorganized. And so it's basically up to those people to translate it into English. Now, of course, there are also individuals who are English speaking who will translate it usually for themselves or maybe for a smaller scale project. There are some libraries, for example, Japanese organizations, actually Japanese American organizations, that have libraries, but usually for literature, not for academic works, where they work on translating them from Japanese to English, for more people who are English speaking to have access to those Japanese literary works. When it comes to the academia stuff, we really don't have anything. So, you know, of course there are individuals who are leading initiatives and trying to get some. But yeah, I was going to say, we need more. We need a more concentrated, organized effort.
Well, this feels like the perfect opportunity to talk about my concentrated, organized effort. So, as I think I mentioned it at the beginning of the call, and I briefly mentioned it at FujoCon, I'm launching something called the Bloom Initiative. You can check it out at thebloominitiative.com. When I was at FujoCon, it was in its infancy, in the sense that we just have the website and a form just to kind of start getting a sense of what people are hoping to preserve or collect to, in order to make that database happen, some type of translated database, some type of preservation of BL, and not just from Japan, but also BL in the context of China, which has also become its own phenomenon in the context of Thailand, in the context of other countries, not just Eastern as well, also Western countries. Just what is this phenomenon called BL, and how is it tied to the way culture is currently being developed or kind of being coded now? And the Bloom Initiative, at that point, I was in conversations with the New School in New York, which, Ari, when you mentioned academia, I was like, God. yeah, like academia is not, has not been created to help in efforts of this kind. But right now, where I'm at with that is I am the director of development for the newhistoria.org. And that ties into the Bloom Initiative, because the newhistoria.org is a concentrated effort that has been conducted for the past 15 years and has only been published in academic journals, but that because precisely academia is as gated as it is, in order to communicate important work, biographies, or anything related to, particularly in the New Historia, it's media that was created or has been driven by the female voice or the female gaze or the female creativity and or female identifying. And in BL, it's more centered towards BL, but essentially we're working on publishing around 400 translations and putting those online. And that's probably going to happen in tandem with funding for translations for BL research papers and putting those into the database. So that is literally what I'm working on. Nice. At the moment. And we've applied even for the Humanities Grant of the United States, which, by the way, if anybody who was here under the Trump government might know that there is a natural bias against anything that has LGBT or feminist or international in a project. So I'm not going to say more on that, but let's just say that that's a reality. Politics affect whether or not you get academic grants. So what essentially we've done is turn it more into a business model and through an open protocol. So again, tying into, I feel like every time I talk, I'm like the data doctor. I'm like, here for the terms of the internet. So there is kind of a solution to the internet thing, but it's also in its infancy and it's essentially open protocol online. I don't know what internet education is like. Like, I didn't go to school and people tell me what the internet is. It kind of just happened one day and it's like, oh, computers did it. And also you're in, and also, wow, suddenly you're connected to the whole world. But what the internet is essentially an open protocol. It's a protocol that anyone can use and use it in whatever way they possibly can, basically. And that's what allowed the entire world to connect, and also what allowed, you know, Napster to happen at the time. And for Napster, there to be no regulation, and it was like the wild west of humanity, woo! Which turns out we all do need some type of regulations and boundaries to a degree, healthy ones. But once that protocol, the business model behind it, became ad revenue and marketing dollars were put in order to gain more power and consolidate finances and revenue for companies, that's when and privacy came in order to identify profiles and turn those into units that can be marketed towards. Like, guys, I really know a lot about this because I used to run paid ads. Like, my entire job was to put into a computer 128 factors to identify the perfect person to sell a product to, and to just hammer them day in and day out with retargeting, remarketing, and several different funnels on how to make sure that finally that person pressed click, you know?
You're the one who's been selling me those Renta Omegaverse brother fucking ads that I get everywhere then.
Listen, I'm not saying I don't know you. I'm just saying I kind of know you. No, but like, I was part of that ecosystem for a long time, and that's exactly why I left it. Like, open protocols are being developed that exist outside the current internet. And one of them, for example, is the Interledger protocol, which is actually a financial protocol. And the entire idea behind that is, when it comes to the internet, for example, banks, if you want to try to, I don't know, has anybody tried to hire a freelancer abroad or try to get paid by someone from another country? Like, you have to go through all the policies that banks have, which you have no control over, or why those policies were instated. For example, Interledger is something where those policies do not factor because it's an open protocol. And the idea is we're all equal and have money has a value that in and of itself within a transaction is just, you know, I'm going to get way too data driven here. So basically, it's just there are protocols outside the internet or that coexist within the internet that cannot be tracked, that cannot disclose your security or your private information, that actually have no ability. There's no way to put in an ad-driven model in those protocols. And they are being developed. It's just that, you know, it's probably going to take a while before we get to a point where, hey, let's join a Discord. And this is an open protocol run Discord. So you know you're safe. You know that there's no such thing as the camera tracking you. There's no such thing as your IP being tracked. There's no such thing as, you know, your username being tied to X, Y, or Z, because the model behind an open protocol doesn't run like that. The internet itself doesn't care what you do in it because it's not sentient. So it's the same kind of idea. It's how much power you give people with a system. And in the case of open protocols, you know, like, as long as regulations are designed from the start to protect our privacy, then that's what's going to happen. It's just a lot of like intelligence by design.
And I won't say it's mine, because there's a lot of people involved. And if anything, I think you guys are also crucial to that. Like, there's a ton of stuff that went into even learning through FujoCon panels that informed me and helped me like really make up my mind about that being such a need that needs to be like done. But also, there's another component to the Bloom Initiative, which is grants for people who might already be doing the work. Because, well, Ari mentioned it earlier, like there's people who are already translating or doing stuff, but they're doing it independently because they want to in their own time and they're not being rewarded. So if there are people who already kind of start or do that research, I hope that with the Bloom Initiative, there are ways to kind of provide them with a grant to continue doing so. And with people who might have endeavors like, hell, FujoCon, like financial support for spaces that are safe for continuous discourse or conversation around those topics. Like, it's all of it needs to be supported somehow. And it's kind of like, that's what I'm on right now, like as a mission.
When you have people who work and study and observe subcultures, cultural trends, groups of people, history, the most important thing that happens is eventually they all find each other. And then the next thing that happens is that they strengthen together and they create a web, they create a network. And then that is the key in preserving, because then they've created this ever-growing network that will continue to preserve this history, this thing that they started looking at. And the thing is, in terms of BL studies and that sort of realm that we're in, we haven't had that strong network. We've had people do initiatives, we've had projects, we've had lead researchers, we've had a lot of these different things, but we've just really started to get past the, we found each other, mm-hmm. Now let's create the network. And with BL Garden, with the Bloom Initiative, this is where you're starting to form these legs, so to speak, or the main branches of the web. And web being, you know, like spider web, not, you know, www. you know, the Bloom Initiative is one of these legs. BL Garden is one of these legs. I think of, you know, some of the guests you've had at FujoCon. We think you look at various conventions, that's, they have an organization under them. So that's another leg. You, these people step forth, these groups step forth, and they're the ones who are creating these main parts of the network. And as it continues to grow and organize and solidify, what we'll have from here is an established network. And we can really just, what do they call it? The golden age or whatever. Oh, yeah. The boom will happen, where then just the research is pouring out. The translation is happening. We're getting all this research that we didn't have before that may have not been translated yet. And because we'll have this network working together, and that's what's most crucial about this.
So for this fan that asked this question, this is mostly directed at Crystal, but also just for the group. What can fans listening and fans like Fujoshi out there do to help these kind of things happen?
Well, right now, the most important thing they can do is show us that they exist, because a lot of the institutions and grants or potential venture capitalists or potential angel investments or potential anything that might help drive these initiatives, they don't understand even what we are or who we are or what, how many of us there are, et cetera. So right now, the bloominitiative.com, for example, is just concentrated on having a forum to just say hi and let us know you exist, you know, because that's a way for us to be able to present to anyone that we are reaching out in order to create those partnerships, to build those relationships, to build those networks, to gain the financial backing to do all these things, is honestly knowing that you are out there and you're also interested.
Nice. You hear that, people? Let us know you're out there.
Yeah, say hi. I know that the aunties have driven some of you underground, but you're not alone.
So another like change of pace or time for something totally different. This one is pretty relevant to what we were talking about earlier in terms of like the colonization of fandom spaces and, you know, superiority, Americans, all that crap. So do you think that fandoms in Eastern or Latinx spaces are way more easier to be in and interact with than English or Western fandom when it comes to not only shipping, but how they respond to fan content in general?
Things can seem better simply when they're different. And I think the best way to say it is that it's different. They're all different. Each fandom is different. And when it comes to, say, Japanese fandom, you know, you may enter into it, but there's going to be a lot of different sort of rules. I mean, this is, I don't even know if this is still a concept in English speaking fandom, but, you know, when I was growing up with it, there was like this sort of unofficial etiquette you know, and there's a different sort of etiquette there, and nothing's better or worse, it's just different. But when it comes to the English speaking fandom, like I said before, you know, you have the biggest concentration of privilege here, and that is something to deal with. It's not fun. You have people interpreting other cultures as they feel freely privileged, entitled to. You have this lawless sort of feeling to English speaking fandom. I can't really speak for a lot of other language based fandoms because I'm pretty limited in what I could do other than Japanese and English. That's about it. It's not like I'm in, you know, Norwegian fandom or Spanish speaking fandom. Granted, you get some mixture in there because I have a lot of Portuguese speaking fans following my Twitter. So I get into like Blime and like, but I don't speak Portuguese, so I'm kind of suffering because I'm like, oh crap, I hope Google Translate is right. But these other places, they're different, and I think at times you got to find the right place for yourself. But English speaking fandom is heinous, and it's a beast to me. And yet, if I curate it, I'll be fine because I have many friends here, and I think it's curation is got to curate. That's how you survive.
Honestly, on my end, I really agree with everything you're saying here. And if anything, I think I went hard right now on US fandom, and I'm not going to go easy on you, but I also think there is an advantage that is positive, and that's a language and education that not every culture necessarily has either. Like, I think you come in with the trappings of your society, basically, your culture. Yeah. So, yeah, the U.S. suffers from entitlement. True, a history of entitlement. But, for example, my culture suffers from a history of machismo. So, in Latin America, you've got such internalized misogyny that it comes across in the fandom without realizing it. And you can think that you're entering a safe space if you enter a Latin fandom. But you might be entering a space that has internalized both sexism and homophobia, but they don't know it because that's an education that has not happened. And it really depends on where in the fandom journey they're at. Because when I started, you know, I grew up in a country where we have the Bible in the flag and schools are all like, not when it's not Catholic light, it's like nuns and priests. And when you grow up in that kind of environment, the concept of same-sex pairing, I mean, let's start right there with the blatant homophobia that is like taught at the level of the state, you know? Mm-hmm. And depending on which country, which culture, you're coming into whatever their trappings are. So if when I interacted, for example, with Japanese fandoms, I find the sexism also very prevalent, or even the kind of fear of anything outside of their own culture too. Like I remember being in Japan and not being allowed into a restaurant because I was a foreigner. That's going to happen in fandom too. So you're going to encounter everything that kind of marks as a potential negative from each culture, depending on those fandoms. And I think the reason the US just finds itself kind of at the height of the discourse here is, again, that power that inherently comes from the amount of privilege that's concentrated there, but not necessarily because any one of us is better. It's that you guys happen to think you're better.
Right? It's that attitude.
We're trash. We understand we're trash. But like, no, for real. Like I also have found that some of the best conversations I've had is with the US fandom. So it's like both sides are there. Again, I think it's more a social media thing and a system thing that we keep focusing and noticing and realizing the negative above all else, because there's also nothing hotter than seeing someone get ratioed on Twitter. Woo, exciting. You know, you get to come in with 10,000 more people and say, oh my God, you gatekeepy person, sussy baka. You know, it's fun and we're all a team now. Woo, that's social media. That's just, you know, that it happens in a flash. The problem is that in certain communities, there are people who are genuinely vulnerable to this, genuinely in a circumstance that might be dangerous,
And the reaction is always like it's treated the same as if we all live in the same circumstance, which we don't. And that's the piece that frightens me.
You're making me realize, and it's so funny because I'm like, now I understand my answer of it's different. Not better, not worse, but it's different. And you need to know. Mm-hmm. You're making me realize that entering into these other fandoms is essentially like going to another country or study abroad. Mm-hmm. What kind of study abroader are you going to be? Are you going to be that American asshole who goes in being like, America's great, wee? Or are you going to be that person who's like, this country has very different things from me. I need to respect the culture. I'm new here. I don't belong here. I need to learn how to be here in order to fit in. You know, who are you going to be when you go? And that's essentially what it is.
And seriously, also with that example in mind, don't assume that the attitude you take is also going to in some way protect you, because guess what? Right. If you come in with I'm American, yeah, I'm going to be like, oh, good, American, you're going to pay me 3 times what this is worth. Exactly. You know? Because I know. And then they're like people, everybody's, you know, everybody's got their level of how they deal with what's foreign. And to other countries, the American is the foreigner. And to Americans, the foreign country is the foreigner, you know? Mm-hmm. So everybody deals with foreigners in different ways. And I don't think that if necessarily my country were in a position where we were the ones getting all the tourism traffic, for example, of the world, we would be necessarily any better. I just think we would be doing it in Spanish, you know? Yeah. Like, we'd just be like, we are the best, yes. Look at me, I'm making fun of my own ass. I'm fetishizing myself right
now. Canceled.
How dare I? I am caliente jalapeno.
I will say, I obviously can't speak to other cultures because I only speak English. I'm trash. I'm very American in that way. But in English speaking fandoms, what you do get is a sense of like everywhere should be like us. And if it's not, then it's wrong. Because you will see people like in the English speaking Genshin fandom, which I'm not even in. I end up seeing people being like, oh, those Chinese, you know how they are, shipping those brothers together. Or like, I don't care if you're like the freaky Japanese woman, Fujoshi, like that's wrong. And you just, we're no better than them. They're no better than us. We're just different that we do honestly feel that we are better and that we don't have the sort of cultural understanding or like sympathy or like the ability to be empathetic to other cultures and respect them. People in fandom, especially like in queer fandom, are all about how, you know, I am a white person. I must like check my privilege. I have to respect this and this, but for some reason they don't think that applies. The moment that you you ship the wrong ship or you do something that's like fetishizing in their view, then you've lost all of your humanity and they feel like mm-hmm. they can be as racist as possible, which is something that I keep seeing coming up. So
yeah. Well, I think that we have like sometimes fandom, especially because we're all generally young, you know, like we're millennials or younger. There's the sense that we don't want to be like our parents or our grandparents. We don't want to be Karens. We don't want to be boomers. Mm-hmm. But sometimes in thinking that we're not that bad, we can not see how bad we really are. Mm-hmm. And specifically with antis, what you have is this more insidious kind of beneath the surface conservatism that presents itself in their moral universalism, which is where they basically are, you know, moral universalism is a like neoconservative, social conservative concept where you think that the rules or the morals that you have, like they're kind of broadly understood. You know, people look at it as like, oh, well, the Ten Commandments, like everybody can agree on that. And it's like, well, actually you really can't, because those are a Judeo-Christian set of values that may not be reinforced around the world. Like you just can't put that set of principles out there and expect everybody to actually agree on it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when you have that going in, you know, you have this generation that thinks they're woke because they don't, you know, think that cops should shoot Black people, or they don't think that you should, you know, like let people on food stamps die or whatever. Like there's things that were, I think that generally the younger generations were a little bit more advanced. Like we have a different set of bar for human rights, but that doesn't mean that we're not racist or that we're not imperialistic, more so mm-hmm. to speak in this case. And so you have this moral universalism, which is what antis don't realize, because they think of conservatives as like, you know, the Trumps or the big bad Tea Party, and they fail to see the own views within themselves because, you know, they're trying not to be Karens or boomers. And it's just a whole thing. Like, I think that our understanding of things has become so polarized that people don't see the core root of it, where it's like, no, a better sign of maybe like wokeness is actually being able to see the differences and respect the differences and not still come into it as a like, well, I eat sushi, so I'm not racist kind of like thing, where it's like, no, no, no. Like there's varying shades of wokeness, and most people are not nearly as far along as they think, because they think they've hit a couple of, you know, rungs on the ladder, and it's like, oh, I'm fine. It's like, no, 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 there's so much more to go. You're barely there. And if you can't have that sort of respect and recognition, even, or to say that you're, to understand yourself and to know you're not that far along, it's just a completely different playing field.
Yeah. And also, sorry, more to the point to like, whether it's better in Eastern fandoms, you're more likely to run into like dark skinned characters being like whitened to hell in Eastern fandoms than you are in like English speaking fandoms. In English speaking fandoms, that does happen, but you're more likely to see pushback. But there's a lot more colorism that's just like unchecked in Eastern fandoms. So it still has its problems in other places. So, you know, I wouldn't romanticize one culture over another. Just be aware of the differences and people who overstep.
Mm-hmm. So, go ahead. Sorry.
One last thing that's very specific. When fans are romanticizing, say, like Japanese fandom, and they ignore, let's say, racism or sexism, that is very prevalent in a society, and that may be very prevalent in a fandom as a result, as it being prevalent in society, people just overlook it. And we shouldn't. They also come in, I say they, meaning non-Japanese fans, come into Japanese spaces or Japanese media spaces assuming that they just know everything there is to know. Stop it. Annoying. Stop. It's obnoxious. You don't know everything. Sit down. Shut up. Open your ears and shut up.
Listen. I mean, I assume that if they know everything, then they remember that the Japanese were sided with the Germans, right? Back in the day. Okay.
That's I'm a just whole saying. Panel.
Oh, yeah, we have a whole panel.
Anime, I love anime, right. But like, remember, Japan was on the other side. Okay. Yeah.
No, it's a whole thing. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to get into that tangent, but Japan sure really romanticized World War II and forget their own part in it. And I'll leave it at that.
Japan did a lot of things.
Japan
books.
Yes. So if somebody were to, you know, find themselves in the midst of like an anti incident, or they're being harassed online, is there a known comprehensive list of legal resources for people that can use for this kind of online harassment or defamation? Like, where do they go when this happens?
To my knowledge, because of that lack of regulation we mentioned before, anything that occurs on the internet, we have limited laws that really protect us. There are some laws that protect personal brands, like as a public figure. There are some laws that can protect businesses, usually in the realm of if an individual or a few individuals' behaviors are deeply affecting, say, like if they're affecting your profit or your ability to make income, sometimes, depending on your state, there might be some way to protect yourself. But ultimately, even now, I find that there is very, very little to protect people on the internet. Of course, doxing is bad and illegal in some places, many places, maybe not that many. There's some, but ultimately I would have to Google if I was in a situation. So I don't have any, but I do understand the need and the want for having some sort of way to mitigate one of those issues. If you're getting targeted, if you're getting dogpiled, there may not be anything legally you can do depending on the situation, but I know you want to definitely make it stop, especially when it's sort of unwarranted.
Yeah, it would sound like if there isn't a list, this is an opportunity.
Yeah, I got nothing.
I would say BL Garden, we always joke that like we need a lawyer to be a part, because we have a lot of like a team of specialized people, but we don't have a lawyer.
Well, yeah, you could definitely look at AO3 for that. I mean, AO3 has legal protection. I mean, you could always, as a group for BL Garden, you could always write to them and be like, hey, what are you, guys,
hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hey. It's a slip. It's not wrong, but it's a slip. Like, guys, what do you do? And then see if they have any advice as an organization in terms of individuals.
Yeah, I do think that AO3's lawyers are more like copyright and trademark lawyers,
right?
Based on like the list of things that they have mitigated. So that would be a good thing for someone to look at. Like if we could get like a team of like Fujoshi sympathizer lawyers to put that together. As for like practical things that you can do, if you are at any time being harassed, like on Twitter per se, you can always report it. That's not a guarantee. But usually if someone slips up and they like say KYS or like, you know, kill yourself, I hate you, like you should do something. Usually within like, I'd say 2 weeks, Twitter's like, we'll just cut our losses and we'll at least tell them to delete that. If you're being dogpiled, do not be afraid to lock your account. I know a lot of people treat like locking your account as a sign of like weakness. Like, oh, I sent like 20 like messages to her to kill herself and she's suddenly blocked and locked me. Oh, what a coward. Like, no, don't buy that. You're not a coward for protecting yourself. That's just what they want you to think.
That's abusive language.
It is abusive language. And also don't be afraid to like speak out about it. Tell people about it. A lot of antis just feel like, well, I'm going to get away with this because like this person must be so ashamed of what they're doing that they're not going to talk about it. No, advertise that shit. Name them. Don't let them get away with it. But also don't feel like you need to put yourself in a situation where you're directly interacting with them. Your mental health and your safety is more important than talking to some like unhinged, unattended child on the internet.
Yeah. From a psychology standpoint, some of this stuff, you know, the suicide baiting or the abusive language or even the, oh, haha, I harassed them enough that I made them lock, block, whatever. That is hands down textbook abusive behavior, period. That is what that is. If you are experiencing that, do whatever it takes to make you safe and separate yourself from that. Exposing yourself to it for whatever motivation, whether it's to prove that what they're saying is not true or to sort of stand up to them, you don't have to. You need to seek help, seek support, separate yourself from that. It is abuse and you need to get away from it.
And I'll just say real quickly, like if you haven't done this already, this is always a great time to check to make sure that your online handles where you're maybe more out as a Fujoshi or with what you like, with like fan fiction, BL tropes, sexually things, you know, that kind of stuff. Make sure that that doesn't tie back to any of your work emails or your legal name or what you go by or any emails in general, because if somebody were to Google you, if they can't come up with your online handles, that's a very good sign then that they would have trouble fully trying to dox you. I mean, I know that if somebody's really going and doing the hard work, they can do whatever they want. They can hack stuff. But for maybe the less tech savvy antis or, you know, just make it so that they can't do the first thing that they're going to try to do, which is to Google you. And as long as they can't try that back, you've solved one of their problems, because very quickly now they are trying to get people fired. And so they will dox to try to do that. So just secure your accounts.
I have a very specific story to this.
I do too. So, but I will not tell mine, but go ahead.
Mine is funny. It'll be a funny story. It's not some of my worst ones where somebody actually did call the university I worked at. There was a younger person who was very kind of anti-ship, who I don't know how. Well, actually, I have some ideas. My first name has, you know, a very specific spelling. And they found my LinkedIn. And my LinkedIn is now deleted because I don't need it anyways. But, and you know, but some people may have to have a LinkedIn for job searching or emails, or they have connections somewhere. They used my name to find my LinkedIn. However, there was nothing they could really do with it. They just made fun of me for working at Lush. And I was like, yeah, it's hilarious that I had like 3 or 4 jobs to support myself through school because my parents abandoned me. Thank you. But
nice.
So funny. You should be on Comedy Central. That'll age me because they'll show that I have cable.
Hey, Comedy Central is available on demand.
I'm saying everybody is like such a like a class warrior until like the classism jumps out because they can make fun of you with it. So
right, right. But the thing was, was that she was putting this on a public sort of space to try and pressure me or whatever the motivation was. And I got mad and I did it back, but I did not put it on public. I just used her photo, her icon of herself, of her face. And I was able to find other accounts with that photo. And then I found her LinkedIn and her name and where she worked, and where she graduated from, and the Japanese program that she studied abroad in. I was able to find all this information from a photo. Please don't judge me.
Reverse Google search.
But the thing is people can find anything. Yeah. Did I tell her I had all this information in DM and she was going to knock it off? Yes. Did she knock it off? Yes. Do I put things on public online? No, because that's wrong. But, you know, anyone can find anything from a photo. They can find anything from a name, just my first name with the spelling. They can do anything. So be really picky about what you put online. If you're not out to family, or if you don't want your job to find out that you have an 18 plus account or whatever it is, if you don't want to be found, be very, very, very picky with what you share. And if no one has told you that because you're young out there, whoever's listening, I'm telling you it now. I will be surrogate parent to tell you, do not put your private information online and try to keep it very limited.
And also you talking about like spaces where you can talk about this did bring up a good point about like legal recourses for people who are being harassed. And unfortunately what we've seen with things like Gamergate is that a lot of the times legal side of things don't know how to handle this online harassment, where there's just like, you sure you have like their name and where they live and all their things that they're like diagnosed with. But if you don't have like someone like physically like, hey, this person is like harming me online with these terrible things, they don't know how to react to that. I think that's also something to keep in mind if you're ever looking towards, the legal realm to deal with this kind of harassment, unfortunately.
Hey, Fujos, become lawyers.
Yes, please, someone do like a Fujo law crash course. Yeah. Like my cousin Vinny, but it's like my Fujoshi, like, I don't know, Hisoka.
My Fujoshi and Fudanshi and Fujin.
Please.
Law firm.
That's going to be the next FujoCon project. It has to be. Like, Beale Gardens, we have to, like, fund a...
We're lawyers now.
Law school.
I mean, when you have networks, the next step, once they're booming quite well, is to have various funds for things, scholarships, you know. So,
yes. Yeah, please support.
On our way. It's our own little society.
There we go. First, we're going to make a... just a utopia.
And there'll be a BL hospital. And...
Well, but man, I mean, this, like, truly, I really hope that we do make these efforts, and anyone who's listening, like, even just by making yourself known and present to, there are real works of fiction that have been lost to us forever that were of great importance in the context of gender studies and female history and male history and male LGBT history and female LGBT history. Like, and non-binary, and like I just
all of it,
all of it, things. Just in the spectrum of the human experience, but particularly culture and media that gets developed not by a primarily male heterosexual group usually tends to get lost, which is the reason why the new Historia was made, because quite literally part of the project is recovering biographies that were not included in historical texts. That existed, that did amazing things, but that were removed by men. And in many ways, when I see governments or people have the power to take down media works developed by spaces that are not, you know, created by heterosexual men, I feel it's kind of the same idea of erasing that space, those voices, and their collective history. If at any point people feel that BL is a type of media that, you know, has not caught up with, I don't know, woke discourse or whatever, do know that it is a type of media that was born recently by comparison to everything else, but was not happening recently. It's just that there's no record of it. And a lot of those records are lost by design, by people who chose to remove them, who are in power. So, you know, it's really just very important for us to kind of make sure that doesn't happen again.
Mm-hmm. All right. And that, I think that's a good way to wrap up this section. We actually have a compliment for us all, FujoCon, and also Ari and Crystal and everyone who made FujoCon happen. I really wish we could have gotten to this one at the end of our panel. They say, hello, thanks for hosting the space. I've been a BL fan for quite some time now, 10 years. And as someone from Latin America, what I see is that sadly, this bigotry is something that has started pretty much on the US or English dominated spaces and has been spreading to big spaces of fandom. It's frustrating to see young people absorbing this kind of rhetoric, especially when most of my friends in these spaces are LGBT plus non-American people, and especially in a time when anti-LGBT plus bigotry and fascism is rampant. Thank you so much for hosting this space and opening the space for people of other places outside the US centric sphere. So thank you guys for being a part of this and giving your input, and everyone really enjoyed it. So
yay!
We're gonna move over to, that was the end of our submitted questions, but I actually added in a new question based on things that have happened since FujoCon ended and that panel. So talking about the broader fandom here rather than BL and queer fandom, in response to the rising anti-shipping movement, a pro-ship movement developed in response. Pro-shippers established themselves, ironically, as antis of the anti-movement. They believe that regardless of how they personally felt about fictional content you choose to consume, they would not harass you or run you out of your fandom space or try to find your real name and dox you in real life. Over time, pro-shippers began to be accused of toxicity themselves. So what do you make of the pro-ship community and the accusations of bigotry in the name of anti-censorship leveled against it? So as I'm Black lesbian, and I used to identify as pro-ship. I don't so much now anymore, not because, you know, I think, you know, I'm still very much pro-brother fucking, always. What I found is that it's very difficult when you identify yourself as against something, like not like as a fan of something, but like against something. And this time it's like pro-ship is literally, despite the name, against anti-shipping. And like, if I say I'm a stay, like a fan of Stray Kids, you know what that means. It means I like their music. It means I support them. When I say I'm pro-ship, it's increasingly difficult to define what that means because antis don't even know what they are. And it's ever changing. And I've seen pro-ship be used to mean I'm totally like free speech absolutism, like no censorship whatsoever. If it's like a Holocaust fetishism Nazi fic on AO3, I think that should be fine. If it's, you know, furries and Confederate flag bikinis, that should be fine. And I'm pro-ship. That's what that means. And I don't identify that with that. And I feel like there's a lot of bigotry that has been coming out of the pro-ship community. How do you define yourself like as anti-shipping, anti-shipping, basically? Even just saying it sounds confusing.
You know what it reminds me of is people who want LGB but no T.
Mm.
And it's like, yeah, it's an interesting parallel. It's a larger parallel, but you have experience with being prejudiced and bigotry against you or our history and society in that term. So why are you doing it to somebody else?
Yeah.
Why are you climbing on top of somebody else just to get a little bit higher up?
Yeah.
It's the same problem with racism in the LGBTQ community. And there's just no... there's no place for intolerance. There's no place for bigotry. There's no place for it. In terms of identity, I've never called myself pro-ship, but I do align with the idea of ships.
Yeah.
I like ships. Ships are great. I'm not very diverse in terms of shipping. I'm kind of boring. But like, I think ships are fine, but when we're glorifying something that has harmed huge swaths of society, I don't think that's okay. And I think people who feel that way need to reconsider, and they need to look a little bit deeper beyond themselves and understand that this isn't about censorship or non-censorship. It's about, is this hurting someone? Is it really, really hurting someone? And I don't mean triggered or squicked. Is it squick, squat, whatever it is?
Squick.
You know, I don't mean you find this media uncomfy, as in brother fucking, you know. Yeah, do I like siblings fucking? I get a little uncomfortable. I'm from the South, but you know, but it's fine. I don't care. am I watching it? No. Can you? I will buy it for you. Like, it's okay. But when it comes to hateful symbols, histories of bigotry, there's no place for that.
Like, you really summed it up well, Ari. And I think the problem is that we do focus a lot on the bigotry of antis, and that's because it's so rampant. Like, they're xenophobic, they are imperialist, they will say the most vile shit. And I've had my identity as a Black woman basically like stripped from me so I could be dehumanized just based on what I like. And I talk a lot about that, like how antis utilize, like, okay, you're only allowed to be a person. Like, your marginalized identity is only useful to me until you become basically a freak, or a freak of color, as we have been called. But on the pro-shipping side, I think the issue is that we focus so much on like, well, antis are racist. That means that we can't be, that we forget like racism is just a part of fandom. Like, it's within fandom roots and it's a part of everything. And I just wish that we could, you know, not discount that it comes from the other side too. Like, yeah, you'll let me have my brother fucking, but like, you'll get mad if like, I don't want my brother fucking with a side of like Confederate, like stars and bars. So.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that, like, honestly, when this conversation started to happen, like, I mean, I'm white, and my privilege prevented me from knowing about this in a lot of ways. I mean, not my privilege prevented me, because I should have known. But I think when, like, it was a revelation to me that this stuff happens even in pro ship communities, because I haven't seen it, but just because I haven't seen it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And I think the way that we structured the fandom narrative doesn't talk about it, just like the way we structured the American narrative does not really talk about the realities of things. And so I mean, I don't know what I can do on my side other than to listen and to not discount when people are saying they're having these events or having these things happen to them. Like, for me, it just needs to be education on my behalf, but something that we can do as, like, as a culture, as a fandom going forward, is to make sure that we're talking about this, because there's got to be more people like me who just flat out didn't realize. It's like, I've been a fandom for years. It's like, it made sense when it like clicked. It's like, oh, of course it would, because there's humans controlling it. And there's, at least in this case, it's English speaking fandom. Like, why would I think that people would abandon their racism at the door when they like log on? And so I think that the more visibility we have about this, like, these conversations need to happen, because more people need to realize that we can not move forward just beyond it. Like, we have to address it. And I don't really know how, other than for me, again, to just like listen and to educate.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat. I think it's just continuing to have conversations, continuing to create safe spaces, continuing to not interact with toxic behavior or amplify it, and definitely double down on education and education in this initiatives. Because I personally don't define myself as anti or pro shipper, but at the moment, I am more familiar with my desire to kind of stop antis from doing what they're doing because of the effects that those antis have had on real media. That I have not seen happen with pro shippers yet. And maybe I'm just haven't been exposed to that. I know that, for example, with pro shipping, one of the biggest things had to do precisely with this argument about freedom of expression and absolutism, and precisely like the Confederate flag being wrapped around a character, and these other pieces that have to do with racism. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it didn't cause a piece of media to be removed and an author to be thrown into jail, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's a conversation that is heavy and necessary, but probably didn't really end up in my circles, because in my circles, what we're looking for is preservation of works. So I ended up coming across anti, so I'm more familiar with why I dislike antis than why I dislike pro shippers, for example. So I'm going to need to learn more about pro shippers. I'm going to probably dive into more research around it. But that's also why I don't feel comfortable identifying as either or, because I just think we are quick to assign a label to ourselves that we don't even know what that label might mean.
Yeah.
And I'm very wary of that, because how, and especially in the context of being someone in the United States who's Latinx, saying Latinx as an identifier for myself is already a controversy that I fight every day within my own community. Am I Hispanic? Am I Latina? Am I Latinx? Wait, no, that's a word that was created. That was this. You know what? I'm already dealing with that. So I want to also deal with how fandom wants to label me. But I do know that I want to make sure that a queer author does not end up in jail for creating queer works.
So on that note, how can we make fandom a space that is, if not necessarily safe for everyone, a little bit less toxic? Do you think that's even possible?
Curate, we know that. Block, we know that. Having tutorials, more tutorials for how to mitigate dogpiling experiences. But ultimately, it's social media. It's not really in our control. Yeah. Their whole point, and it's engineered for us to have as many connections as possible. And on terms of, in terms of Twitter, it's not like you have a group like on Facebook or something. You can't lock and have a bunch of locked accounts that it just, it doesn't really work. So logistically speaking, it might be kind of difficult to do anything beyond what we're doing now.
And Crystal, I think you had some more uplifting.
I mean, no, I agree with that, because essentially even the options that I am currently kind of involved in, again, they're still in their infancy and require a lot of organization and a lot of still pieces to be ironed out. So I guess the hopeful part is that they are being built. It's the idea that as long as the people who are creating those safer spaces or protocols or potential solutions are alive and engaging in with the material. So for me, the education part is very critical. Then we have the possibility of actually developing these technologies or spaces, and they are being worked on. And it's nice to know at least that there are gonna be options. But let's just say that the whole point of this is a problem and we're facing it right now is we all need to gather now and make the solution. And that requires constant conversation, evolution, and education. So you're all part of this now, and everybody who's listening is a part of this now, and hopefully you will participate.
Yeah. I mean, okay, ultimately, so attitude, just make a better community amongst each other. In terms of like actual tech, there's really not much we can do in the way of social media, but in terms of attitude, there's a lot we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can you imagine? Log off your social media.
No.
Delete it, and perhaps
I will plug that there is Boba Board, which is looking to be like a Tumblr replacement, and it does have an eye towards like lowering the risk of harassment, and it is very like, I guess you could call it a pro-ship space, and places like that are emerging, so like support things like that. But more importantly, like Crystal and Ari said, like have a conversation, and like attitude wise protect yourself and the fans around you.
So that's it for today's episode. Thanks again for coming back on the podcast, y'all. Like, so great to have everybody. If you would like to share your thoughts on today's episode, please send them to us by adding us on Twitter at BLGardenDFW or email us at BLGardenOfficial@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow Ari @_Querios and Crystal Marie at, is this a backslash or forward slash?
I'm just trying not to get the ads. Well, yeah, that's not actually a part of it. You can't put slashes in.
Sorry.
Names, you know that.
No, I don't, Cherry. You are always schooling me on this stuff. I'm not very hip. So at Crystal Murray.
And for me, just BL Fan Project is at blfanproject.com. You can see people's sort of testimonials and voices there and their experiences with the BL fandom. We also have the 2021 survey is out that is running all this year. It's one of the first posts featured on the BL Fan Project. So please take the survey and spread it around. Thanks.
I'm Crystal Ray, and by the way, you write my name with an I, C-R-I-S-T-A-L, just because a lot of people search me as Crystal with a Y. Which is helpful when anyone's trying to cancel me, actually. So sorry for all the other crystals of the world. But I'm basically leading the Bloom Initiative, which is available at thebloominitiative.com. It's B-L-O-O-M, Bloom, like the flowers. And please feel free to hop on and say hi and find me on any social media. I am an extremely public person who lives off of being online. So I'm going to have to deal with this for my entire life.
All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And thank you, BL Garden, and thank you for making FujoCon.
Thank you.
you so much for listening to this episode of the 801 Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about us, check us out on our website at blgardendfw.com or check us out on Twitter at blgardendfw. If you love this podcast and are considering supporting us, find us on Patreon and you can get your name on the podcast, like Barb Cold, Puck, Ray, Twiggly, Audrey G, Carly Williams, Jacqueline Gonzalez, Joe Kiss, Anna, Christina Coleman, CJ, Crystal Marie, Dusty, Imbo Snoodler, Kendra Lawrence, Marina Carlson, and Rita Wynn. In addition, please consider leaving a 5-star review wherever you listen. We really appreciate every last one of you. And until next time, this is your host, Izora, signing out.